Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 26, texts numbers 1 to 3. We have verse number Narada Uvacha. Sa ekada maheshvaso ratam panchashramashvakam tvisham dvichakrame kaksham. So there are two more verses in this triplet, so I'll just read them and then we'll go through the word for word of those two. Ekarashmyakadamanam ekarnidham drikubaram pancha praharanam sapta varutam pancha vikramam haimopaskaramahruhya swarna varmakshayeshudihi ekadasha chamunata pancha prastham agadvanam. Translation. The great sage Narada continued, "My dear king, once upon a time, King Puranjana took up his great bow, and equipped with golden armor, and a quiver of unlimited arrows, and accompanied by 11 commanders, he sat on his chariot, driven by 5 swift horses, and went to the forest named Panchaprastha. He took with him in that chariot 2 explosive arrows. The chariot itself was situated on 2 wheels, and 1 revolving axle. On the chariot were 3 flags, 1 rein, 1 chariot driver, 1 sitting place, 2 poles to which the harness was fixed, 5 weapons and 7 coverings. The chariot moved in 5 different styles, and 5 obstacles lay before it. All the decorations of the chariot were made of gold." Okay, so fasten your seatbelts. There's quite a long purport. These 3 verses explain how the material body of the living entity is under the control of the 3 qualities of the external energy. The body itself is the chariot, and the living entity is the owner of the body, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita, "Dehi no smin yata dehi." The owner of the body is called the Dehi, and he is situated within this body, specifically within the heart. The living entity is driven by 1 chariot driver. The chariot itself is made of 3 gunas, 3 qualities of material nature, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, yantra rudhani mayaya. The word yantra means a carriage. The body is given by material nature, and the driver of that body is Paramatma, the supersoul. The living entity is seated within the chariot. This is the actual position. The living entity is always being influenced by the 3 qualities, sattva, goodness, rajas, passion, and tamas, ignorance. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, tribhir gunamayair bhavaihi. The living entity is bewildered by the 3 qualities of material nature. These 3 qualities are described in this verse as 3 flags. By a flag, one can come to know who the owner of the chariot is. Similarly, by the influence of the 3 modes of material nature, one can easily know the direction in which the chariot is moving. In other words, one who has the eyes to see can understand how the body is being driven, influenced by the particular type of quality of material nature. In these 3 verses, the activity of the living entity is described to prove how the body becomes influenced by the quality of ignorance, even when a person wants to be religious. Narada Muni wanted to prove to King Prachina Bahishat that the king was being influenced by the tamaguna, the quality of ignorance, even though the king was supposed to be very religious. According to Karmakandya, the process of fruitive activities, a person performs various sacrifices directed by the Vedas, and in all those sacrifices, animal killing or experimenting on the life of animals to test the power of Vedic mantras, is enjoined. Animal killing is certainly conducted under the influence of the mode of ignorance. Even though one may be religiously inclined, animal sacrifice is recommended in the Shastras, not only in the Vedas, but even in the modern scriptures of other sects. These animal sacrifices are recommended in the name of religion. But actually, animal sacrifice is meant for persons in a mode of ignorance. When such people kill animals, they can at least do so in the name of religion. However, when the religious system is transcendental, like the Vaishnava religion, there is no place for animal sacrifice. Such a transcendental religious system is recommended by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami ma suchaha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reaction. Do not fear. Because King Parthena Bahisha was engaged in performing various sacrifices in which animals were killed, Narada Muni pointed out that such sacrifices are influenced by the mode of ignorance. From the very beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, Dhamma Projita Kaitavo Tra. All kind of religious systems that are involved in cheating are completely kicked out of Srimad Bhagavatam. In the Bhagavad Dharma, the religion dealing with one's relationship with the Supreme Personality Godhead, animal sacrifice is not recommended. In the performance of Sankirtana Yajna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, there is no recommendation for animal sacrifices. In these three verses, King Paranjana's going to the forest to kill animals is symbolic of the living entities being driven by the mode of ignorance and then thus engaging in different activities for sense gratification. The material body itself indicates that the living entity is already influenced by the three modes of material nature and that he is driven to enjoy material resources. When the body is influenced by the mode of ignorance, its infection becomes very acute. When it is influenced by the mode of passion, the infection is at the symptomatic stage. However, when the body is influenced by the mode of goodness, the materialistic infection becomes purified. The ritualistic ceremonies recommended in religious systems are certainly on the platform of goodness, but because within this material world, even the mode of goodness is sometimes polluted by the other qualities, namely passion and ignorance, a man in goodness is sometimes driven by the influence of ignorance. It is herein described that King Paranjana once went to the forest to kill animals. This means that he, the living entity, came under the influence of the mode of ignorance. The forest in which King Paranjana engaged in hunting was named Pancha Prastha. The word Pancha means five. And this indicates the objects of the five senses. The body has five working senses, namely the hands, the legs, the tongue, the rectum, and the genitals. By taking full advantage of these working senses, the body enjoys material life. The chariot is driven by five horses, which represent the five sense organs, namely the eyes, ears, nose, skin, and tongue. These sense organs are very easily attracted by the sense objects. Consequently, the horses are described as moving swiftly. On the chariot, King Paranjana kept two explosive weapons, which may be compared to ahankara or false ego. This false ego is typified by two attitudes. I am this body, ahanta, and everything in my bodily relationships belongs to me, mamata. The two wheels of the chariot may be compared to the two moving facilities, namely sinful life and religious life. The chariot is decorated with three flags, which represent the three modes of material nature. The five kinds of obstacles, or uneven roads represent the five kinds of air passing within the body. These are prana, apana, udana, sammana, and vyana. The body itself is covered by seven coverings, namely skin, muscle, fat, blood, marrow, bone, and semen. The living entity is covered by three subtle material elements and five gross material elements. These are actually obstacles placed before the living entity on the path of liberation from material bondage. Jai Sri Sri Ganite, Sri Sri Krishna Balaram, Sri Sri Raja Shamasunda. The word rashmi, rope, in this verse indicates the mind. The word nida is also significant, for nida indicates the nest where a bird takes rest. In this case, nida is the heart, where the living entity is situated. The living entity sits in one place only. The causes of his bondage are two, namely lamentation and illusion. In material existence, the living entity simply hankers to get something he can never get. Therefore, he is in illusion. As a result of being in this illusory situation, the living entity is always lamenting. Thus, lamentation and illusion are described herein as dvikubra, the two posts of bondage. The living entity carries out various desires through five different processes, which indicates the working of the five working senses. The golden ornaments and dress indicate that the living entity is influenced by the quality of rajaguna, passion. Being influenced by the mode of passion, one desires so many things for enjoyment in this material world. The 11 commanders represent the 10 senses and the mind. The mind is always making plans with the 10 commanders to enjoy the material world. The forest named Panchaprastha, where the king went to hunt, is the forest of five sense objects, form, taste, sound, smell, and touch. Thus, in these three verses, Narada Muni describes the position of the material body and the engagement of the living entity within it. So, this is a very elaborate analogy. It starts a new chapter in the Paranjana Saga. Here, Paranjan is taking a trip out from his palace and he's leaving his wife behind, as we hear in the next verse. Previously, they were inseparable. He was very attached to his wife, but now he's leaving her behind in the palace and he's going out on a hunting trip to the forest of Panchaprastha. Now, we know that his wife indicates intelligence, particularly the faculty of viveka, discrimination. So, and we know that the forest that he's going out to hunt in is called Panchaprastha. Prastha indicates the destinations of the senses. Where are the senses going to go out to? They're going to go out to the sense objects, the vishayas. So, to take this trip, he necessarily has to leave his wife behind. He has to leave his discrimination behind. If he didn't leave his discrimination behind, he wouldn't be going off in a mode of ignorance trip to shoot with his five arrows. We have the word, well, it's not in this verse, it's in one of the other three verses here. We have the word pancha praharanam, that on the chariot he had five weapons. And those weapons were the functions of the five knowledge-acquiring senses, so hearing, seeing, smelling, touching, and what's the one that I missed? Tasting, yes. So with these weapons, he's going to mercilessly kill the animals in that forest, the sense objects. He's going to go out and do some hunting. So if he's going to fire his senses at the targets of the sense objects. And these senses, we can start from the beginning actually. Each word has a lot of subtlety tied in with it. First of all, King Puranjan himself is described as Maheshvasaha. He has a very large Maha Ishvasa. And the word Ishu means arrows and Asa means a launcher or a shooter. So an arrow shooter is called a Ishvasa, a bow. So he has a very large bow, and the Acharyas explain that that means that he has a very prominent attitude of being the Karta and the Bhakta. He's going out with the attitude that I'm the doer, I will hunt, and I will enjoy this activity. I will enjoy these sense objects. So his mounting the body, which is compared here to a chariot, his becoming, his entering onto the chariot, and that chariot is said to have 5 horses. So I believe the 5 horses here were compared to the 5 working senses, the legs, the arms, the 5 working senses. And the senses in general are described here as ashugam, that they move very quickly, especially you can say the knowledge acquiring senses, they move very quickly towards their sense objects. They're elsewhere described in Upadeshamrita as vegas, right? Different vegas, pushings of the senses. Vega also indicates speed. The senses are very fast and forceful in their demands. So they're described here as ashugam, and dvesham indicates the 2 aspects of the ahankara, the ahamta and the mamata, the identification of me and mine. So much of the aspects of the body, the apparatcha, the vehicle, is there's nothing necessarily wrong with the vehicle, but it's misaligned. So there's nothing wrong with ahamta and mamata, but it's currently misaligned. The real ahamta and mamata, the real sense of I, is that that I'm a devotee of Krishna, right? Dasosmi. It reminds me of one Mayavadi joke. Somebody told me that some Mayavadi had written on the wall, like a kind of a Mayavadi graffiti, if you will, Soham. Sometimes you see it, actually, if the maybe in the Chitrakuta ashram on the walls there, Soham, different vakyas from the Upanishads. So the devotee comes along and adds the syllable da, da soham, right? So basically that's the difference between the material consciousness and the spiritual consciousness. Soham, that I am the soham is the materialistic consciousness that I am, that I am the Lord. I am the enjoyer, I am the controller. And the devotee's consciousness is dasoham, I'm the Lord's servant. So then, anyway, the next part of the story goes that the Mayavadi came back and saw his wall was vandalized by this devotee, and now it said dasoham. And so then he added another syllable, sa. Sada soham. I'm always God. I'm always Brahman. Anyway, and then the devotee again added another da. Daso daso hum. So I'm the servant of the servant of the devotees. So there was some exchange going on there. And similarly, the mamata, the possessiveness, that is now directed towards so many objects, things that we think we own. I own this house. This vehicle is mine. These possessions, this family, it all belongs to me. This is the materialistic version of mamata, which is so ingrained in us. The spiritual version is, of course, a sense of possessiveness towards Krishna. Krishna is my friend. Krishna is my son. He's my village darling, who is as dear to me as my own children. He is my lover. He's my master. There's different kinds of mamata, different kinds of, and the Brajbasis, they have that sense of possessiveness towards Krishna that's well known in them. Many of the other kinds of devotees may think, I belong to the Lord, which is also a very wonderful attitude. But the Brajbasis are, the Lord belongs to us, which is even a step higher, and the Lord really likes coming under the control of the love of his devotees. So he prefers that strong mamata of the devotees of Raja. So these are, that's Dvisham. And then Dvichakram, the wheel of the body has two, the chariot of the body has two wheels, sinful life and religious life, sinful activities and religious activities. These two things drive the body. You know, you can, the body is a vehicle, you can use it for many things, you can use it for sinful life, you can use it for religious life. Sometimes we inevitably do one or the other. Even just existing in this world, we inevitably do some form of sinful life. Even by breathing, or by walking, we inevitably destroy some living entities. So there's inevitably some sinful life. Just to eat, we have to eat another thing. So there's some sin in that. So Ekaksham, the word is used here also, that there's one axle and three flags. Prabhupada told us that the three flags were the three modes of material nature. At different times, different flags may be hoisted on the chariot. And Prabhupada talks about this in the Prabhupada. One who's very expert can see that, can understand by which flag is flying, who is on the chariot. Like, for example, Arjuna is Kapidvaja, right? He had the flag of Hanuman on his chariot. So those who are on the battlefield, when they saw that flag, they could understand, oh, it's Arjuna. So similarly, by certain symptoms, one can understand what mode the living entity is currently under the influence of. The transcendentalist can differentiate that. So the chariot has three flags, but it has ekaksham, one axle, you know. An axle is the pipe, the rod to which the wheels are joined, right? And that is said to be pradhana, material nature. So you have pradhana, material nature as a whole, and then it's three gunas on top of that. So you have the ekaksham and also the three venum. And panchabandhu ramadaya. Panchabandharam here is compared to the five pranas, the five airs within the body: prana, udana, vyana, samana, and I can't remember the other one. But there's the five airs within the body are compared to the five. Prabhupada translates it as the five uneven roads. That's one way of translating bandhura. Bandhura basically means crooked or bumpy or uneven, is one way of translating it. Prabhupada translates it like that. So the airs move within the body. Some move up, some move down, some move around, etc. They move on different paths. So the five uneven paths. Eka Rashmi, there's one rope, which is said to be the mind. This we know from the Bhagavad Gita. Ekadamanam, there's one chariot driver. Some people say it's the Paramatma, other commentaries say it's the intelligence, which also we know from the Bhagavad Gita. So the intelligence is there. So he's taking the intelligence on the chariot, but its functions such as viveka are kind of switched off. So even though the intelligence is still there, it's not separated from the living entity, but it's inactive. It's the chariot driver is there, but he's not really taking a strong control of the reins. That he's just kind of letting them do their own thing. And Ekaneetam, one sitting place, which is said to be the heart. The living entity is situated in the heart or in the chitta. It's a very interesting analogy, actually. In the 26th chapter, we're in the 26th chapter now of the 4th canto, right? But in the 26th chapter of the 3rd canto, there's a very elaborate description of the theistic Sankhya system taught by Kapila Muni. And he gets right into all of... Basically, he's covering most of the elements, the 26 elements of Sankhya here. Again, the number 26 comes. That in Sankhya, there's said to be 26 elements. The 5 Mahabhutas, earth, water, fire, air, ether. And the 5 sense objects, right? Smell, touch, taste, and so on. And then there's the 5 working senses, your arms and legs and so on. And your 5 knowledge-requiring senses, the ears, eyes, and so on. That makes 20. And then you have 4 on top of that, which is the mind, the intelligence, the false ego, and also chitta is taken as a separate element. Chitta is a word that can be translated in many ways at many different times. It's very contextual. We often translate it as the heart. But in a very technical Sankhya analysis, it indicates the purified consciousness. It's said actually to be a product of the Mahat Tattva. It's a representative of the Mahat Tattva. The Sattvam, which is not Mishram, Vasudeva Sattvam, that's also said to be Chitta by Kapila Muni. So that's also an element according to the Sankhya count. Sankhya literally means counting. You're counting or enumerating the material elements. And then that makes up the 24, which are material. And then you have the 25th, which is the living entity, the Jiva. And then the 26th, Paramatma. Brings to mind, I remember we recently in the Sanskrit school finished going through the commentaries of the 26th chapter of the 10th canto called Wonderful Krishna. Krishna had just finished lifting Govardhan Hill, and the Vrajvasis start to realize that he's somebody very special, somebody that's very alaukika, very superhuman. So then they approach Nanda Maharaj, and Nanda Maharaj, as usual, repeats to them the words of Gauga Muni, and so on. There's some reflection and some discussion about who is this boy. Anyway, at the end of that chapter, Sridhar Swami makes an interesting play on words based on the 26 elements of Sankhya. He has an interesting verse there. He says, Shad Vingshe Dashame Vyaktaha Shad Vingsho Dashamo Harihi Vinaktu Pancha Vingsham Mam Shadu Vingshatitaf Pratak. He says that in this 26th chapter of the 10th canto, the 26th element, Hari, the 26th element is Paramatma, right? So the 26th element is manifested, is described in this 26th chapter, the 26th element, Hari, is described. May that Hari please become manifest before me, who am the 25th element, who am separated from the other 24. So he has an interesting play on words there. And we see, why are we talking about this 26 elements? Well, four of them, as we mentioned, are the mind, which is said to be the Rashmi, the reins of the chariot, and the intelligence, which is said to be the chariot driver. And we talked about the Ahankara when we said Dvisham. The Ahankara was subdivided into its two constituent elements, Ahamta and Mamata. And then Chitta, the Ekanidam, we heard in this verse, the sitting place, the heart, the place where the soul sits in the heart region or the purified consciousness region, that's Chitta. So these four have four predominating deities. We know that the predominating deity of Chitta is Vasudeva. That's why it's also sometimes called Vasudeva Sattva. He's also the predominating deity of that purified consciousness element. And then the predominating deity of Ahankara, as we know, is Sankarsana. And the predominating deity of the intelligence is Pradyumna, and the predominating deity of the mind is Aniruddha, which is interesting. Literally the name Aniruddha. Niruddha means stopped, and Aniruddha means not stopped. So it's like unstoppable. It's a very good name for a kshatriya. Yeah, kshatriya name, unstoppable. But it's very interesting that the deity of the mind is named Aniruddha. By extension, that can apply to the mind. The mind is quite Aniruddha. You can't stop the flow of the mind. It's continually demanding, continually accepting and rejecting, desiring and hating in situation. So it's like when we try and control the mind, you know, Arjuna compares it to a hurricane. It's that difficult to stop. You can't stop it, actually. You have to just keep it engaged. It's like when you have somebody that's too talkative. I'm sure we've all had this experience in our lives. We've come across people that just don't be quiet. And, you know, eventually you have to ask them to be quiet. They just won't stop talking. And you say, all right, please, let's have a few minutes of quiet now. And they manage to be quiet for 2 seconds. And then again, they start on some new topic, and they just don't shut up. So the mind is like that. It's unstoppable in its dialogue. The mental dialogue is always going on. So then we have the Sanskrit says, Dvi Kubaram. There's two yokes to which the reins are fixed. And that's compared to Shoka and Moha. And Prabhupada writes something very interesting about that, very insightful few lines he writes about that. I'll just read it again. The causes of his bondage are two, namely lamentation, Shoka, and illusion, Moha. In material existence, the living entity simply hankers to get something he can never get. Therefore, he is in illusion. So it's kind of three things. There's a kind of a hankering, a lamentation, an illusion. When you're hankering for something that you can never get, then you're in illusion. You can't ever get it. So you're in an illusion thinking that you'll be able to get it. And then when you finally realize that you can't get it, then lamentation. So as a result of being in this illusory situation, the living entity is always lamenting. This lamentation and illusion are described here in as Dvi Kubra, the two posts of bondage. So when you have a rain, it's got two Kubra. It's like, I'm not very expert at chariot diagrams or chariot schematics, but to my understanding, the ropes actually have some little things that they're threaded through. Otherwise, they could fall off the chariot. You could lose, you know, they could go flying in the wind or something, right? If you somehow lose control of them, so they are tied down there, like kind of locked in through some. And those are the kubras. So that's related to the mind. The things, Shoka and Moha are very much connected to the mind, which is the ropes here, the reins of the chariot. So then we have Panchaparaharanam, the functions of the five senses, such as hearing and so on, which we talked about. Saptavarutam, the seven coverings of the dhatu, seven coverings of the body, which are called dhatus, which are the skin and the bones and so on, all the different elements of the body which are covered in Ayurveda. And then you have what's here described as Panchavikramam, which is the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the gloss that Panchavikramam refers to the gamanam of the five senses. It's their activities, it's their range also, their gochara. So the chariot here, the ratam, is also described as haimopaskaram, that it's decorated with gold. And Prabhupada in the purport talks about how gold is symbolic of the mode of passion. The gold color represents Rajaguna. And that here, Paranjana is described as Akshaya Ishudihi. He has an unlimited supply of arrows in his quiver. And the Acharyas explain that this refers to the unlimited desires that the living entity may have. The desires are unlimited, and they're never satiated, actually. Also in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes how if one can tolerate, up until the time of death, the urges of the senses, then one is qualified for liberation. And that verse indicates that as long as you are in a material body, the senses will always be pushing, the mind will always be demanding, the urges, the vagas will always be there. They won't stop, actually. But somebody who is very dhira is not affected by them, just like also in the Bhagavad Gita, the analogy is given that the river, when all the rivers are flowing into the ocean is not disturbed by the constant inflow of the rivers. So this indicates that as long as we are in this body, we're going to have a constant inflow of input from the senses and the mind, demands and so on. But as long as we're dhira, as long as we're absorbed in Krishna consciousness, yes, those things will be in and out, but they'll be filtered out in a momentary way. You know, we all know as devotees, we may be chanting japa, we may be reading Srimad Bhagavatam, and the mind will suddenly just pop something into our head, or the senses will be distracted by seeing something. But it's just a momentary thing. It doesn't really take away from it if you're absorbed. So, in this way, Paranjana's mounting the chariot of the body, he's going out to the forest, which is called Panchaprastha, the forest of the five sense objects. He's going to do some hunting with his five arrows, which are his five senses. And he will forget his intelligence and enter into this mode of ignorance activity of killing animals in the forest, which is used as an analogy by Narada Muni to point out to King Prachina Bahishat that these sacrifices he's doing of animal killing are actually mode of ignorance. He's using this body for mode of ignorance activities, animal sacrifice. Krishna talks about the Vedas in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Trigunya Vishayo Veda Nishtrigunya Bhavarjuna. Actually, the Vedas are largely 95% or more dealing with karma kanda, which is trigunatmaka. It's just nothing transcendental. I mean, we often as devotees, we put the Vedas on a very high, so the four Vedas, Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva, and they have their place for people in this world. Most of the people on this world are in Pravritti Marga, so they need some religious way to fulfill their desires, their material desires, but the Vedas themselves don't deal much with transcendental subject matters. Krishna is hardly mentioned there at all in the Samhitas, in the four Vedas, and it's mainly different yogis for attaining different material desires, or different stories of the exploits of different demigods like Indra. We often glorify the four Vedas as, you know, but most devotees actually haven't read them. And if you did read them, you would find that they are actually very karmakanda based. So better than the Vedas are the Upanishads, because they're dealing with Gyanakanda and they're dealing with some awareness of the self. And better than that is Vedanta Sutra, because that gives the important parts of the Upanishads and gives a proper understanding of the Upanishads. And then the most supreme is Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the commentary on Vedanta Sutra. And that's where the highest level of knowledge and devotion and so on is found. So we'll end here. It's 9 o'clock. If anybody has any questions or comments, really quick. Otherwise, we can end. Yes. Yeah, it is a little... Sankirtan Prabhu's question is that it seems confusing that there's chitta, which is taken to be a separate element, but it seems to be like, you know, what's the difference between chitta and jiva? Like, consciousness is, we think of it as a function of the soul. And, you know, it seems like that when we say chitta, we're talking about having two minds, two... Yeah. Yeah, it's. I guess it does. There's some overlap there, it seems, to a degree. But chitta would be safely translated as consciousness, whereas mind is. You know, consciousness can be like a kind of awareness, right? It's awareness. Whereas the mind is more of a thinking, it's a kind of a processing, except you have your awareness, and what comes through the awareness, then you process that in terms of accepting, rejecting, and then next step, intelligence, you know, discriminating. So it seems like there is some difference. Actually, if you want to read about chitta, it's actually described in quite a lot of detail in that 26th chapter. I think there was at least four or five verses that really got into it, and yeah, it's quite a mysterious thing that we don't often hear about or talk about, but it's really well described there. So, but that's all I can say on this part. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, dear Matsyavatar Prabhu, for your scholarly class. There's been quite a lot of technical details, and if I could ask you for some explanations, for example, on relationship between the mind and intelligence. So the mind is described here as the reins, which looks quite passive, and the intelligence is the driver, apparently, is in one of the explanations, which is quite active. At the same time, we see that in most conditioned souls, the intelligence is hardly active, and the mind takes the upper hand. So do you have some comment on how does this happen, that the rain, which is like almost like a dead object, controls and becomes more active than the intelligence driver? Would you like to say something about this?
Please. Yeah, I guess, and we can't forget the five horses either, the senses. Yeah, when the intelligence is not sharp, then it's, as you compared, it's like a very inactive driver, or a driver that's pretty much let go of the reins. And the horses are the senses which are constantly feeding information to the mind. This sense object is out there. You can see this, you can smell that, you can taste this. And then the mind's chasing after the... It's following the dictates of the horses. It's just going along with what the senses supply. So, the senses are pulling, and if there's no... The horses are pulling, and if there's no intelligence to hold them back, then the mind just follows the horses. The mind's just a bit of rope, right? The reins are just a bit of a rope, so if there's nothing holding them back, then they just follow wherever the horses go. So the mind just follows the senses like that.
Okay. And one more question, which is sometimes asked, and it is quite mysterious. It seems different schools deal differently with this one. I don't know, maybe you have heard something. In our Bhagavatam Sankhya, it seems that buddhi, or intelligence, is said to be the product of the mode of passion, whereas the mind is said to be the product of the mode of goodness. Mm-hmm. Whereas usually we see intelligence as something good and something helpful for spiritual life. We say buddhi yoga.
Yeah.
And mind is very often the rascal, you know, avaishnava, and but it's the product of goodness, and the buddhi is the, or intelligence is the product of passion. So do you have some thoughts, comments, maybe some information about how is it that something that apparently higher belongs to the apparently lower mood, intelligence, and...
I remember reading the same section and the same question arose in my mind. I don't have a special Shastric answer for that, unfortunately. I don't know, sometimes we say prasanna manasa, that sounds more in the in the mode of goodness. It's hard to say. We'd have to research about that. I'm not sure if that question is answered in the Bhagavatam commentaries. You could look up the verse. Did you look up them? Yeah. I haven't heard from other sources. Yeah, I'm sorry. That was a good question. I also had it, but I haven't come across the answer. Yes, there's some Matajis in the back. This Mataji standing up, she's asked a long time ago. So.
I want to say something just about this point.
Oh, sure, yeah? Sure. Go ahead.
So I was always wondering about this point. And I heard in a class here that the intelligence is supposed to be is coming from the mode of passion, mm-hmm. because the intelligence is always finding ways to do things. And the mind comes from the mode of goodness, because the mind is able to discriminate. I like this, I should do this, I want to do this, this I don't want to do, and so on. Hmm. That's what I heard.
Yeah, that's true. In Kavya, one of the good attributes of a poet is called pratibha. It means creative intelligence. That the poet has to have a kind of intelligence that always comes up with new ideas, new comparisons, new analogies, something far out that'll blow people's minds. So that pratibha is, yeah, it's very creative, and intelligence is very creative. Pratibha, yeah. Yeah. And also, if we look at the Sanskrit, the name of the Sanskrit deity of intelligence, it's also Pradyumna, right? It's also a very shining, as we talked about here, the gold color, or the shiny color, is also indicative of the mood of passion. I don't know, some small ties, but it's hard to get a concrete answer to that question. Yes, Mataji.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. In the previous paragraph, the beautiful woman is compared to intelligence, and then we hear that intelligence is also the chariot driver.
Yes.
How do I see the comparison between the two?
Well, when it's said that In the next verse, tomorrow's verse, I believe, it'll be said that he left behind his wife to go on this hunting trip. So the wife is particularly that function of the intelligence, the discrimination, like the viveka. You can't separate the intelligence from the body, but that function of discrimination may be turned off, so he left that behind. So the wife is that particularly that aspect of the intelligence, at least in this analogy. Yeah, thank you. Was there one more question?
There are some commentaries that seem to equate this wife, Paranjani, with Mahatattva or Chitta. So that's how some of philosophy, some of the schools deal with that problem, how buddhi is higher than the mind, because they say that this Mahatattva or Chitta is sometimes, it's also in the Gita in this seventh chapter, it's connected, Mahatattva is connected to buddhi. And in Shijiva Goswami's commentary, he equates this wife with the Mahatattva buddhi, this original buddhi, which is also the body of Brahma. So that's the, we can say, the samadhi intelligence, and is the source of all the other goods in this material world. Whereas the other intelligence is more like subservient to task-oriented.
Right. So Jiva Goswami takes Paranjana as symbolic of Chitta.
Paranjani, yes.
Paranjani,
the queen,
rather.
The queen,
yes.
As Mahatattva or Chitta, or because it's sometimes also called buddhi or tamasa buddhi. And that's the body of Brahma also.
That's an interesting connection. Yes. Yeah. Okay, one last question from Prabhuji.
The body is made as resembling the spiritual nature of the soul. So the spiritual nature is manifesting in terms of Satchitananda. So transformation of the ananda is the mind, transformation of the chit, sat-chit, is the intelligence, and transformation of the sat is the senses. In this way there is a, because it's ananda is considered to be the highest, so also the mind is considered to be the highest.
It's an interesting correlation. Where did you hear that?
In the Srimad Bhagavatam. We don't remember the reference. It is in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Huh. Interesting. I have to look into that. Thank you. We'll finish here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Gaur Premanandi.